I titled my message this morning, Not Enough. Do you have enough? Do we have enough? How much is enough? I don't know if anybody really knows exactly how much is enough. There's a lot of good television programs on. They're bringing back some of the old ones. One of the ones that they're bringing back is a little twist on Fox. It's called The Wheel or something like that. And on The Wheel, there's 10 million, 1 million. Everybody ever watch that one? I never really paid that much attention to it. One that I always liked, that I always thought was good because it was educational, was the show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? There was a recent article in the newspaper about that, and the answer was everybody. Now, there's an estimate now that there's close to 15 million, and it's probably more than that since this article was written, that are millionaires. I think a lot of them got it the way that Judy and I have been trying to do it ever since we've been married. We play our birthdays on the lotto, and guess what? We're never become a millionaire yet. Our birthdays are still there, but those numbers don't match. So anyhow, well, 10 years ago, there was just fewer than half that number of millionaires. Now, we're up into billionaires, and they're multiplying fast. In 1983, Forbes said there was 13, can you imagine, 13 American billionaires. Today, there's 600, 700, 800 billionaires. Never before in history of this country has so much money been made quickly, so quickly, by so many people. Well, on one hand, it may be wrong to want to be a millionaire, but it can be dangerous. You know how amazing things have today have warning labels? You even buy something at the store, it's got a warning label. Something that's common sense goes out the window. You don't even think about it, but it's got a warning label on it. Cigarettes have warning labels, and I think that's good. There's a warning label. If you pull down your sun visor in most cars, there's a warning label up there about wearing seat belts and everything else. But I think we ought to put warning labels on money. Put warning labels even on a stock certificate. Even put warning labels on deposit slips. Or a warning label and print it on a credit card. Sometimes I think there should be warning labels on that kind of stuff too, because there's real danger to money and material possessions. Now I know people don't like to hear sometimes preachers talking about money. Some preachers use it in a wrong sense, but Jesus talked an awful lot about money and possessions and worldly possessions. I could probably preach every Sunday about wealth and monetary things and how to handle it, because Jesus talked more about money than almost anything else that he preached about in the parables. You may not realize this, but in the 38 parables that Jesus taught, 6 of them dealt with man and woman's relationship to money and material things. They're bringing back a lot of the old television programs, too, on MeTV and some of the other ones. I watched I Dream of Jeannie the other day. That was cool. But there's an old-timey guy that you might remember from the golden age of television, Jack Benny. Jack Benny was considered a cheapo or frugal or something like that. He probably had more money than anybody, but he was very frugal, very cheap. And he tells a story about things that are going on in his life. And if you ever seen Jack Benny, when he got asked a question, he would go like this and he would think about it. Well, one day he was walking down the street and a fellow approached him with a gun. Boom. Give me your money or give me your life. He paused. The robber said to him again, give me your money or give me your life. Well, Jack Benny went like this, and he says, what are you doing? He says, don't rush me. I'm thinking it over. give me your money or give me your life. He wasn't sure if he wanted to give him his money or give him his life. So he had to think about it. Well, most of us would like to think for a few moments about money and about our life. So let's see what Jesus had to say about these two subjects. Because the background of the story that I shared with you is an incident that occurred in Galilee as Jesus was teaching a large crowd. This young man called him out. Rabbi, tell my brother to divide the inheritance of our father with me. Way back when, in Jewish law, it was clearly prescribed that the death of a father, the elder son would receive 2/3 of the inheritance, and the youngest would receive 1/3. And this is obviously a younger son who's complaining about his inheritance being unfair. You see, nothing will divide brothers and sisters and family more than dividing up an inheritance. So it was then, and so it is now, Jesus refused to get involved in such a petty family squabble. But he was concerned, however. And with the large implication of the preoccupation of things in this world, he said, beware of greed, young man, for life does not consist of things possessed. A sum total of a person's life is more than their financial portfolio. He then illustrated a point by telling a story. There was once a man who had an unbroken run of prosperity in today's language. He was successful. He played the commodity market. He played the stock market. And he managed to amass a fortune. But his barns or his bank could not hold as much of it. His solution was, I'll just get me a bigger bank. Then the financial security in hand, he could set back, as it says in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon, supposedly the wisest man in the world. If you read the book of Ecclesiastes, you wonder if he really was wise, because Solomon said, eat, drink, and be merry. And that's what the young man's philosophy was going to be. But the truth be told, when we hear this story, we find ourselves rather envious of this man with a lot of wealth, financially successful. We see him, people that are rich, as being savvy and wise. Yet Jesus concluded this parable by saying, this man was a fool. So the issue this morning, as we look a little deeper into that parable, is what did this man do wrong that Jesus said that he was a fool? I want to look at a couple things to answer that question. Because we must understand that this is not a parable about money. On the surface, you would think that's what it is, but it's not. It's a parable about the value and the importance of life. So I want to suggest a few things that this man was a fool. First thing, he was a fool because he had full barns or a big bank. But he had an empty heart. He was rich in people's eyes, yet he was poor in God's eyes. And the question that we should all ask ourselves this morning, are we rich in God's eyes? The man in his parable was a fool because he banked on his full barns. It's similar but different. On the way over this morning, coming down 19 to get on 10, there's a cattle farm on the right-hand side. And not too long ago, there wasn't many bales. They roll hay now up in bales there. And now it's full. They're putting more on the other side. So I don't know how much hay those cows can eat, but he's got more than the cows can eat, and he's still piling it up. But anyhow, so as the people of God store money, we should be storing the money in this church does a good job doing it, supporting the hurricane people and supporting the young people that come to this church. That's where we should be putting our money, in the stomachs of the hungry, in the minds of the uneducated, the bodies of the sick, the spirits of the oppressed, and spread the gospel. Then we will be rich in God's eyes. The other thing, this man was a fool because he overestimated his own value in the scheme of things. Listen how he talked. I will store my grain. I will build bigger barns. I will say to myself, self, In four short verses, this rich man used the word I and my 10 times. You talk about a narcissistic bunch of politicians we got. Listen to them, even on the debates. It's I do this, I do that, this is mine. Well, this guy in the parable that Jesus taught did not see others as the source of his bounty. Not even God, only himself. So his error is not that he was a wealthy man, because God doesn't condemn anybody for being wealthy. It was his foolishness to lay in his superficial egotism. I like agriculture. I was raised in the country of Pennsylvania. I was raised on a farm. And I once read a story from a doctor in agriculture, PhD if you would, and that he estimated that the nature provides 95% of the energies necessary to produce a crop. And the farmer produces 5%. Think about that. When they put a seed in the ground, they put it in the ground, and they just trust God that it's going to grow. That's like 2.5%, and then the other 2.5% the farmer provides is to get the crop and bring it to harvest. Yet in the story, this narcissistic farmer used words, I and mine, all throughout, signify that he was the only one involved in building his wealth. Old-timey movies was on television, too. Not long ago, the movie Shenandoah was on television. Anybody remember that movie with Jimmy Stewart? Jimmy Stewart was playing a farmer in Virginia during the Civil War period. And they sit down as a family, and he begins every meal with, Lord, I planted the seeds, I plowed the ground, I gathered the harvest, and if I were not able to put this food on the table. But we thank you anyway, Lord. I think sometimes we all need to understand the role of grace and mystery in life, or we too might fall prey to sin of thinking we're just more highly than ourselves. The other thing was, this man was a fool because he forgot what was real in his business life. What was business all about? This man thought that his business was all about commodities and the markets. But Jesus thought in deeper terms. Jesus is suggesting to us that our business is in life, and we all have a business. We don't necessarily have our shingle out, but we all have this thing called the business of life. And it goes far beyond tally sheets and investments and tax forms. Our real business is that our humanity gets down to the old philosophical tension between becoming and being. And we tend, and I'm guilty too, we tend to spend more time concentrating on what we are becoming, and we lose sight of what we are being. So what is this thing called the business of life? Well, it's not to be successful. It's to be faithful. It's not to amass a whole bunch of things, but it's to grow closer to the mind of God. It is not to become rich in things, but to love people. That's our business. But you see, Jesus was saying a fool will never grasp it. And the last thing is this. This man was a fool because he forgot about time. His whole attitude in life was that time was unlimited. Not too long ago, Trevor's going to be 10, I guess, now. When he was a little bit younger, he was fascinated with watches. And I got him a watch, but it was too big for him. But I think his mom or maybe Mimi got him one that was a digital watch. And I was trying to teach him time. It was hard. Because he would say, well, what time is it? He'd look at his watch. Well, it's 9:53. I said, no, Trevor. It's 7 minutes to 10. You get that blank look? Because, see, digital watches don't tell them time. Digital watches don't teach them time. Well, what's the problem then? It's simply this. Time needs to have a sweep to it. That's why you have that second hand. Boom, 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 boom. So what's the problem? If we learn to see time as 9:53, then we only see the context of the immediate moment. We don't see it in the larger context of the day. It's absolutely lethal for Christians to see time only as the right now. And this is how it would look on the world stage. Christians should learn to view time as a movie, something. God's Son, and I can't remember exactly how it was, but one of the old timings where they didn't have times, and the farmers especially would take their hand like this and they'd watch the sun come up. And based on where the sun was on their hand, they knew what time it was. It's amazing. How many people do we know or have known that they spend all their life preparing to live? It may be good to save our money for a rainy day. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's perilous to save our life for a rainy day. Why? Because time just might run out on us. Those fine folks was in the Walmart store and that mall up there had no clue that their time was about ready to run out. The folks in Dayton, Ohio, in that area were just restaurants and businesses and different things and entertainment. No foggy idea that their time was getting ready to run out. That's why we hang on to the blessed hope that we don't have to walk around this life and worrying about this or that or who's behind the bush or what's going to happen, or like I used to do a long time ago in some of my shady business practices to see who was coming after me. No, I keep my eyes on the mark of the high calling. So the clock is relentless and it beats us down. It's like that old Timex commercial. It keeps on a ticking. But regardless of what we do or fail to do, that old clock is just going to keep on ticking. It's a fool that says heaven can always wait. It's a fool who builds barns but postpones life. So even if you could gain the world would never be enough. How much is enough? But God is. That's what he is saying. What God gives us, let us be careful that we invest it and not hoard it, that we might be rich towards God and to rich to one another.